I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is Monday, which is the time for the Front Three Podcast World Cup Preview Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, me, Adam Butwood, the one and only Nico Morales.
I'm always first now, and it makes me nervous.
You, like, you made me feel self-conscious. I'm just like, right, you're first every time now, just to be safe. And the man of myth and legend, Chris Edge himself, is here too. Chris, how you doing?
I'm very good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. We are here to preview, first off, in today's episode, Groups A and B of the World Cup, of course, kicking off this Thursday. We're going to be doing Group C and D tomorrow, E and F on Wednesday, and of course G and H on the first day of the tournament. Before we get into it though, guys, I mean, are you excited about the World Cup? Nico, how are you feeling? Are you hyped?
I had my usual bout of cynicism, like, more football, like, oh, it's going to be shit, you know, and I'm writing stuff about how, like, you know, international football isn't nearly as good in terms of the quality. In comparison to club football, but I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the teams. I just looked up, you know, the World Cup groups, so I have it up on the screen while we're going through them, and it's just cool, you know, nations playing football against one another for a trophy. It's pretty cool.
That is what a World Cup is. What's your earliest sort of World Cup memory? Out of interest,
earliest World Cup memory. I know, I think it kind of coincides with my earliest football memory, which is I watched Raul at the Santiago Bernabeu with my grandmother, and I think it was for a friendly or a qualifier for the World Cup for Spain, right. And I had a Raul jersey and everything, so I think that's kind of, that's why I support Spain, because my mother's sort of side of the family is, you know, obviously Spanish, and that's sort of my earliest memories with football, is watching Raul at Real Madrid Stadium. So
I like that. We will come on to Spain very shortly. Before we do that, before we come to Group A as well, Chris, I mean, are you excited? Are you hyped for England's chances, for example?
Yeah, partly because they're quite a likeable bunch as well. That sounds weird to be considered as a sort of influence on whether you're excited or not, but no, I like this group. They seem like a nice bunch of guys, and I think that probably means the excitement just edges itself up a little bit.
I'm excited for the football. It is always a feast of football. I'm even excited for the opening fixture on Thursday, Russia versus Saudi Arabia. Not the most exciting game, I think it's fair to say, but let's preview Group A with the hosts, Russia in, of course, Chris. The lowest ranked team of all 32 in the tournament. They haven't actually advanced past the group stages of any tournament since 2008. Do you think it's ambitious to think they could even progress from the group with the likes of Egypt and Uruguay alongside them? How'd you rate their chances?
Not well, if I'm very honest. They've had some success in tournaments sort of towards the back end of the last decade. The Andrei Arshavin Euros was probably the big launch pad for Russian football, but you're looking for that sort of same, you know, trigger point, and it's just not there. I mean, Golovin is a talented young player who impressed me in the Europa League, specifically against Arsenal, and I think he could move to a bigger league off the back of this tournament. But I look at sort of Zagoev, Akinfeev, who for me have never really sort of built on the potential that they had and managed to sort of elevate themselves to a move to a bigger league. The centre-back options are really quite questionable. Neustadter, who is actually a German youth international who filed a one-time switch to play for Russia. he's just not high quality. There's no other way to really build that. And I think one of the problems that Russia has, and this is true of every horse team pretty much, is that because they don't have to go through the qualification campaign, they don't manage to get through the reps of competitive games. So they've had to play friendlies pretty much all the way up until this. And I think that in itself poses a set of problems to try and navigate. And I think when I put all of those together, I just see it being a really difficult one for Russia this tournament.
Do, Nico, Russians' chances potentially depend on the mercurial figure of Mohamed Salah, the name on everyone's lips? Obviously, that opening game is against Saudi Arabia for Russia. If they win that, things are looking good. But if Mohamed Salah is fit for their second game against Egypt, makes things a little bit difficult. Would you think it's going to be Uruguay and Egypt going through as the top two? Or do you think Russia could maybe squeak in depending on the fitness of the Pharaoh's talisman?
No, I don't think Russia will be going through. I think they'll probably unceremoniously go out in the group stage. Probably one of the worst teams at the tournaments. But as I'm looking at it, I've heard a lot of people slating, you know, the talents that you know, Uruguay has at their disposal. But I see a really talented, maybe defensively oriented team that could probably do something at this tournament if they try to focus on that. They have Jimenez, who's an Atletico Madrid defender, Godin as well, and Cáceres, which is. Has always been supremely talented, but has really struggled with off-the-field issues. He was at Southampton and Juventus and a series of other clubs and never really got past, you know, some DUI issues, some drinking issues and other things. So I think he still made it onto the team, so I imagine the national team coach has some expectation of his professionalism. But other than that, you know, they're the usual suspects here. Cavani's a supremely talented forward. Suarez, I think this is probably the twilight of where he is in terms of his football. He is getting up there in age, and I think where we've seen that most affected in his game is his physicality. He looks really, I think he's always been a player that's never really been able to keep the weight off. I think that's just like a biomechanical issue of his. Like, he's never going to be the most fit guy out there, but now more than ever, every Barcelona game I watch this year, I think he looked a little slower because of that, and I don't think it's necessarily his fault. I think he's just getting older. But other than that, they have Bentancur in midfield and a host of other, you know, workable players, along with Lucas Torreira, who's had a really good season at Sampdoria. So I think, despite, you know, a lot of people putting down the chances that Uruguay has, I see a talented team that I think could probably do something. Like I said, if they focus their talents defensively, which I think is the key for any team that isn't supremely talented going into a cup competition.
I think they are many people's favorite finish first in this group, certainly. It's going to be interesting to see if Salah is fit for that first game for Egypt against Uruguay coming up this Friday. He, of course, scored 71% of Egypt's goals during the World Cup qualifying campaign. Of course, he was the man who led them to their first tournament since 1990. It's going to be very interesting to see if he's recovered. It's all a bit vague at the moment. They're saying he is probably going to be fit, but the hopes for that first game could rest on Salah. Just as I say, Uruguay are favourites to finish top, Chris. Saudi Arabia, the second lowest ranked team in the competition behind only Russia, favourites to finish bottom.
Yeah, I can definitely see why people would think that, because I think realistically we tend not to know a lot about Saudi Arabia as a national team. It's very much punctured by just moments, you know, and I think that's one of the things that's been interesting to me in sort of studying them and trying to learn a bit more about sort of how they play and this kind of thing. And I think this, the strength of them is they've got some quality in the final third. It might not be the quality that we know when his household names, but I think there's a lot of speed. There's a bit of dynamism in there as well. And I think looking alongside the teams that they've got specifically in Group A, I think it would require them to beat Egypt personally. I think Russia they can beat. Egypt, I think they're going to probably need at least a point against and then someone to do them favours. The only weakness really I see with this one, maybe other than that sort of household name quality that we talk about, is the defence, because I don't think it's the quickest. And I think that's the problem, is that you mix the lack of speed with, you know, the fact they don't play against quality, a lot of the Saudi Arabia players. It means that it's one that will have to almost get everything right. But at the same time, I think a theme of this tournament might be counter-attacking. And I look at the way that the team is set up with their coach, Juan Antonio Pizzi, who I don't think is as averse to counter-attacking. You know, granted, I think that you can't overlook that quality thing. I'm keen not to sound too high in them, but I think there could certainly be a surprise in this group if Egypt don't click quickly.
Hmm. Give me your group prediction then, Chris, how it's going to finish. I'm going to go for the obvious. Uruguay, Egypt, Russia, then Saudi Arabia last. Are you following suit, or have you got a little surprise there?
No, I think as optimistic as I may have built them there, I look at, you know, the fact you've got El Nani in the middle. Even sort of Sam Mosey is fairly aggressive and athletic. And even without Salah, I think it's so easy to point to him and say, well, he's the one that makes them trick, taking the final third. I would look at Trezeguet as well. 23-year-old who is with Anderlecht but has been on loan in Turkey this season, as someone that I think it was a friend of mine, Eric Krakow, who works at BeIN, that was first kind of talking about how good he is and things. And when I looked him up and watched him and watched about 5-6 of his games, I thought, yeah, this guy does have something, actually. He could be one of those breakout stars that gets himself a move to a better team. With that in mind, I would say Egypt second, Saudi Arabia third, and Russia bottom.
Ooh, okay. Nico, what's your lineup there?
Yeah, I'm going same as Chris. I think despite the fact that Saudi Arabia obviously don't have any major stars, I think all of their players play in the Saudi Arabian League, and you know, to a certain extent, that is an indictment of their talent. I still think that they will be able to put something together given the quality of their coach. And Russia, I just, despite the fact that they have guys like Shedyshev and maybe a few other people that have played for some of the better sides in Europe, I still think Saudi Arabia will come into this tournament with something to prove. And while I don't necessarily see an upset, like I couldn't see them going through or anything like that, I don't think that they'll finish dead last, and I think they'll probably surprise some of us. So I'll go Uruguay, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and then Russia.
That would be embarrassing for Russia, wasn't it? I know South Africa were the first hosts of a World Cup to not get through to knockout stages when they finished third in their group in 2010. So if Russia did it by finishing last, God, that would be a tough pill to swallow, I think, for Russia. But guys, let us know your predictions on Twitter at The Front Three for Group A. We'll move on now to Group B.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Very interesting group. On paper, it feels obvious, Nico. Portugal, Spain. Then, of course, we've got Morocco and Iran. Feels like what's up for debate is just who's going through first, Portugal or Spain?
I think for me, it's Spain. There was a really good feature in The Athletic, and I'm also doing some World Cup stuff over there as well if people want to check that out. But there was something on Spain where it talked about, you know, the transition from one golden generation to the next, and that's something that I've talked about a lot on this podcast. And it's, I think, with Spain, with I really don't know how to pronounce his last name, but the Spanish national team's head coach, he's mixing what has always been Spain's style, or at least what has iconically been their style for the past couple of years, this heavy possession dominant style, which can have its, you know, detriments to your players. You know, if you have that level of expectation, especially at an international tournament where many teams know the value of simply, you know, sitting deep and playing on the counterattack, then, you know, that can give players the ability to succeed, because they have to live up to this immense style, and it's sometimes difficult to perpetuate a more complex style of football at a tournament like this. But I think Spain have the right combination of being able to put that through, because the players are so similar and they play in so many similar systems, and they have something to go back to every time they got together in preparation for this World Cup. But at the same time, they have the directness through different players that they've called up, like Rodrigo and other guys. And I think there's just so much talent in that Spanish team that, given the fluidity of style, given the talent, given the coach, given the preparation, I would struggle to see Spain struggling. So I think it's probably really highly likely that they come first in this group.
Would you agree with that, Chris? It feels like an interesting tournament for Spain in that, of course, it feels like they're flying under the radar somewhat. Of course, they set the world alight between, 2008, 2012, when they won all those tournaments consecutively. But this year feels like, the favourites are Brazil, France, Germany, Spain maybe just behind those three in contention for the trophy.
They are, but they shouldn't be. I think Lopetegui's done a really good job of sort of modernising the Spanish team. There's a lot of players that obviously missed out, and we could talk about them for a good while. But I think it's important to focus on the ones that are there. Yes, Andres Iniesta is, by his own words, I think close to being tapped out as a professional. But I think at the same time, this squad has so much sort of just talent. No other way to build it. If you look at the likes of Isco in midfield, who I think will have a very good tournament. There's a chap at right back whose name escapes me that came in the other night in place of Carvajal against Switzerland that I thought had a really good game. And I think that's the thing, is that Lopetegui has made this team so much better and so much more modern in its approach. And because of that, I think that they're arguably set to have a bounce-back tournament, if you will, because I don't think 2014 was a good one for them by any stretch. And in fairness, I think defending champions do tend to have a little bit of a drop off because it's impossible almost to match what you did 4 years ago. I think they'll do really well.
I think also just to kind of elaborate on the tactical flexibility that I talked about before, they have, we've often associated Spain with maybe like a 4-3-3 sort of system with the fullbacks being a major part of that. I think they, at this tournament, given the fact that they have taken both Nachos, Nacho Monreal and Nacho Fernandez, one for Arsenal and one for Real Madrid, to the tournament, they have the ability to not only play the 4-3-3 that I think they're very good at doing from a tactical perspective. They have all the players to sort of occupy the wide spaces and the central spaces and attack, both out wide and centrally. They have the ability to play sort of like a three-man defensive system and go forward with wing-back type players. So we kind of talk about teams maybe having a variety of different defensive tactics, but Spain, I think they've come with two different options in terms of possession because they know that they will be expected to be that team. They'll be expected to have the ball, and they have more than one approach this time. It's not just the 4-3-3. It's not just the classic Spain overlapping fullback system. It's something else this time, and I think that's really important for their success.
Talk to me about their striking options, Nico, because there's some controversy over Alvaro Morata, of course, being dropped, which Chris alluded to there. Diego Costa looks to be the main man for them in attack. Do you think that is potentially an area of weakness for them? Do you think Costa fits what this team are trying to do?
No, I don't think he does. I think if that is the biggest potential weakness there, because there was a lot of analytics people that kind of looked at that and said, okay, Alvaro Morata clearly missed out on somewhat of an error by the coaching staff in not taking him, because he had what was a cold streak in terms of finishing towards the end of the season, but he ended up what was basically the same amount of sort of expected goals as Olivier Giroud, which was looked at as a miracle transfer. And I think he was getting in good positions, and to blame Morata entirely for the lack of offensive output at Chelsea is kind of a mistake from the sort of coaching selection there. So I think that if anything, that's probably the weakness. But I think the way that they combat that is by having so many midfielders that they can kind of go strikerless. And when you have Lucas Vazquez as a forward and Rodrigo and Iago Aspas, these guys that are more fluid than Costa, I think they have a myriad of options in terms of striking. And that's definitely obviously somewhere where Spain have struggled before. They haven't always had the best striker or one that can link up well with their midfield. Diego Costa doesn't fit into that, but I think if he does fill a void anywhere, it's if they have to break down a deeper defense, or if they have to be proficient on set pieces and they just need that little extra bit, he is obviously that physical unit that will allow them to break teams down in a literal sense. And so I think it just kind of backs up what I was saying, is that they just have a ton of different ways to break down pretty much any team.
What about Portugal, Chris, their Iberian neighbours? Of course, the reigning European champions, having won the Euros in 2016. Ronaldo, the main man, but they do have a talented squad around the Portuguese superstar, Chris.
They definitely have some talent. I can't argue with that. I have slight concerns about the centre-backs. I know Ruben Dias is very young, and Portugal fans will point to that. But I look at Pepe, I look at Bruno Alves, and Jose Font, all into sort of the mid-30s. That to me is a slight concern. And I appreciate, again, what you say as it relates to the Euros, that, you know, they did very much buck against expectation and managed to win that competition and showed, I would say, quite a lot of character in doing so, because they did it without Ronaldo on the field. And so often we look at him as the deciding factor. And I think the fact that André Silva's now managed to come in, and I know he hasn't had the greatest of seasons with Milan, and yet I think he is still a very good forward. And I think he could give them that focal point in the attack that sometimes they've struggled to sort of get out of Ronaldo, because he's not really a focal point type attacker for my money personally. I think he's better when he's served out wide in maybe a front three, great podcast or something along those lines. I think they've got a nice blend of some young attacking talent. I look at Bernardo Silva as a great example of that. But I'm slightly more concerned about what's going on at the back, specifically in the centre.
It is a fair point, Nico, isn't it? But at the same time, I mean, how do you see that forward line working? Because how does this team get the best out of Cristiano Ronaldo? We've spoken, of course, about Real Madrid, about how they've managed that in recent seasons in order to maximise his efficiency. How do you put him alongside André Silva, who Chris mentions there, and Bernardo Silva, who, of course, missed 2016 for injury? It feels like he could be the creative hub of this team.
I think that kind of has to be the trio that works together really well. André Silva and Cristiano Ronaldo, in some of the qualifiers and the games leading up to the tournament, they showed that they can work together sort of in that central space, I think, and play off of each other really well. I think what this Portugal team has to do is they have to allow Bernardo Silva to isolate players. He's a really good player off the dribble. He can sort of cut inside from the right-hand side and go on to his left foot. He has amazing delivery. He has amazing dribbling ability, and I think he has a really good shot as well. So those three players, I think, have to link up exceptionally well in order for this team to work, because I think from a midfield department, the most creative player that you have in that area is João Moutinho, and he's kind of getting up there in age. And even though he has always been a talented player in finding Ronaldo, especially in the lead up to the 2014 World Cup, I don't think that they should rely on that. I hope they'll get a lot of their maybe more unexpected attacking power is from the fullbacks. Rafael Guerreiro has disappeared relatively since Euro 2016 because of a series of injuries, and you know that has been unlucky for him at Borussia Dortmund. But Ricardo Pereira, if they can perpetuate a defensive style, a counterattacking style, he's one of the quickest players that I've ever seen, and I think, you know, that unexpected attacking force that sometimes you get from an overlapping fullback can be really devastating. And if you have someone like him feeding Ronaldo, Silva, and even Bernardo Silva, if he crashes into the center and makes those late runs, I think that can be a real devastating force if they do that right. Now, if they try to possess the ball, I think Chris's concerns about the center of defense with Pepe and Bruno Alves and Jose Font are all completely rational. I think those guys are 100% exposable, especially if they're in a ton of space. So I think it'll kind of depend on the fullbacks, and then, like I said, that trio of Silva, Ronaldo, and Bernardo Silva for them to succeed.
We're talking about Portugal and Spain here as a given to finish first and second. Chris, are we doing a disservice to Morocco, for example, of course managed by Hervé Renard, an exciting team back in their first World Cup for 20 years? Do you think they could potentially make it out of Group B?
They could. I think the thing with Morocco is they've got some really good youngish talent, especially in attack. You could argue they mirror Portugal in that sense, because you've got Hakim Ziyech, who had, I think, the most assists in the Eredivisie last season. Amin Hart of Schalke. Further back, he's not young, but Mehdi Benatia is a very good centre-back. And I think for that reason alone, it's enough to give them, I think, a certain degree of respect that they could definitely take second place. And I,
that's what makes this a little bit difficult, because there is always a dark horse that sort of, you know, propels past expectation. And I think Portugal, yes, they did well in the Confederations Cup, they did well in qualifying. But it's just very much how that back line takes to things. I would say that maybe the distribution of talent, while not as high for Morocco comparative to Portugal, I would say it's slightly better balanced. I would say that's the key difference. And look, the goalkeeper from Morocco, the goalkeeping situation, excuse me, from Morocco is not great. I think there's a few different teams like that. Nigeria is one that springs to mind, where there's no real sort of definitive starter who you think that's a safe pair of hands. But I think they can potentially mitigate that sort of weakness with play elsewhere on the field and the quality that they've got.
What about Iran, Chris, the fourth team in Group B? Back-to-back World Cups for the first time in their history. Carlos Queiroz, of course, targeting the knockout stages. But again, hard to see them qualifying. Hard to see them beyond Spain, Portugal, etc.
Yeah. 2014, they were dour. I think that's the polite way to put it. They were not an exciting team to watch. To that end, I think they've gained a little bit more in the final third. I look at the chap Sardar Azmoun, who, I mean, hasn't had a great season domestically, but I think he's still a very good striker. Scored a lot of goals at Rostov. Reza Gunashiad, who I think I'm saying that right, who was with them in the 2014 World Cup, who was kind of the star man for them. And then Alzira Janabakhash, I hope again I'm saying that right, who was it? Is it Altmar, who I think finished top scorer actually in the Eredivisie last season. He's been tipped for moves elsewhere. I think between those three, there's at least some sort of semblance of some actual attacking talent in the final third for them now. Players like Samir Godos is someone that I'm a little bit familiar with from having watched Östersunds, and I think he's not a terrible player in midfield. The concern is that at centre-back, they've got rid of Jalal Hosseini, who was quite an important part of the team. And I think really what you're likely to see from this team is quite a dour defensive approach to things that will look to keep the scores low. We'll try and maybe nick a 1-0 or 1-1 result, that kind of thing. And it won't be that entertaining. I think the game against Argentina in the 2014 World Cup was very much the best example of what it was like to watch Iran, and to be honest, it was not fun. And I don't see that changing drastically here. They've improved, but not markedly.
Group prediction, Nico? What are we saying?
At the risk of jinxing them, I'd probably say Spain finish first, Portugal second. I'm going to go Iran and then Morocco. I think despite Morocco's relative talent, I could see them being one of those teams that can't put it together in sort of a cogent style because of the personalities of some of their players. So I think I'll go with Morocco at the bottom.
Okay. Chris, what are you saying?
I'm going to say Spain top, Morocco second, Portugal third, and Iran fourth.
Wow. Okay, Portugal third.
Yeah.
God, I got to disagree. I would say Spain, Portugal, Morocco, Iran. Has to be, doesn't it? The obvious one again. But guys, let us know what you think on Twitter at The Front Three. Get any Group B predictions as well. We are going to be back tomorrow with our Group C and D previews. So do tune in then. Until tomorrow, Chris, where can the good people, where can the whole find you?
At KHENEAGE, defending my opinion on Portugal.
And Nico?
You can find me at Nico_O'Morales and also at The Front Three, folks.
Adam Botwood for myself. Guys, we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Three, that's a magic number. Three. It is. It's the magic number. Three. Somewhere in this hip-hop soul community.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A change of seasons means adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow, or all of the above on the same day. This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. With all-conditioned traction and materials and features to keep you comfy and dry no matter what, you'll be ready for anything. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. Allbirds.com, code FRESHSOCKS.